Would you give your mum, dad, aunt or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no!
Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this?
What is... I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising
people. Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Welcome to Conversations Against Living Miserably, a podcast where we try to find solace in a world where our brains are usually against us.
My name is Aaron Gillis, and each week I'll be joined by...
me, Lauren Patterson! Each week we chat to a different guest about how they try and live their life without misery, but we try and do it with a little bit of laughter, because otherwise that sounds like a pretty gloomy idea for a podcast.
This podcast is brought to you in partnership with Dave, the TV channel, and Calm, the campaign against living miserably.
Morning, episode 21. I haven't got Lauren here today, so it's a very boring intro for everyone. I'm very sorry. Keep this intro quite quick today, because we've got a longer episode than normal, because I tried to edit it down, and frankly, it's all quite good. So we usually record for about 35, 40 minutes, but this week we just chatted for bloody ages, so sorry about that. This week's guest is Dane Baptiste. Dane is a comedian and writer who was nominated for Best Newcomer at the Edinburgh Comedy Awards in 2014. He's also appeared on Live at the Apollo, Mock the Week, Alan Davies As Yet Untitled, 8 out of 10 Cats, loads of stuff, just loads of stuff. And his new tour will be going around the UK in 2020, so you should probably go check that out. Today we talked to Dane about social media, equality and using comedy to start new conversations. So it's good. It's a good episode. I liked it. I've already listened to it. You haven't. You'll be the judge at the end of it. I'm going to stop talking. Here is Lauren and myself talking to Dane Baptiste.
Hello. Welcome to this week's episode of Conversations Against Living Miserably. This week we're joined by the comedian who has my mum's favourite joke. It's Dane Baptiste.
Hi.
So sorry to all other comedians who've been on. You ain't got Jackie's top spot.
Got no. Put the work in. Jackie's not. She's not an easy woman to please.
She is not.
She never calls herself an expert, but she knows what she hates, and she doesn't hate that joke. So I'm happy. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you.
I haven't seen you for a while.
It's been a long time. My mum does ask after you more than she asks after me, which is...
She knows you're okay, though.
Yeah.
I mean, she raised you, so she's like, nah, she can handle it. Not sure about that petal Dane out there, though, in that cold world.
Yeah, I did some tour support for Dane. And I think it's fair to say a very white crowd.
It was a good crowd. It's a great crowd. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
Bernard Castle is in County Durham. I mean...
Yeah. They were lovely, but they were so white. And Dan had a joke about being like a Cocoa Pop in a bowl of Rice Krispies. And my mum just never stops quoting it. Never. It's her favourite joke. She absolutely adored. But I have to tell her, like, maybe be careful how loudly you quote it in public.
Yeah.
It's like... not everyone will have seen that show. Yeah. So if my mum ever gets done for racism...
Yeah.
Just know it was from a love of comedy.
I'll give a reference. I'm good for Jackie to get a reference. No everyone can call me Dane, I'm in trouble. Can you imagine if that was like the real thing? What happens? Yeah. The racist people, they're like, their friends are like, yeah, Jerome, you won't believe what happened again. Terry, I've told you, so stop going to the freaking pub and sitting over there. I've told you, you leave Gurpreet alone. He is not a Muslim. He wouldn't be in the pub. That's why, Tel. That's why. I'm not doing this again. Jesus Christ. Just give me his number. Give me his number.
You've got like a hotline.
Every single time.
Yep.
Hello? No, not taking that. Nope.
Avoiding that one entirely.
Yeah, not taking that. Yeah. Collect call from the Tory party. No. We got a backlog there. Outrageous.
Nice. What we always, so like our first question is when was the last time you felt calm?
Oh, that's a good question. It's rare.
I'm quite a neurotic person.
yeah, I'm quite a neurotic person. But I feel like there's lots of windows and stuff and I feel quite calm. So, I mean, maybe stage, I guess. Like during the gig and stuff, it's normally, I feel like, let me think, the last time I felt quite relaxed was this time, exactly last week on Monday, and I had a new bit of material, which was quite risque, tried it out at a gig, and it worked. And it worked in a way I expected it to work, in that, like, it's shocking, mm-hmm. but not offensive, and provocative, which is what you want, really. So, yeah, it's a joke about trying to meet women with cancer.
Right, yeah, you could see how that would,
My favourite thing about comedy is when comedians boil their bits down like that, to just like a bullet point, and you can always see people being like...
Exactly,
context, oh gosh.
Yeah. But, you know, it's a joke I'm trying to write where it's... I really feel like I'm trying to be subversively feminist with it, in that I feel, a woman who is a cancer survivor... is going to be one of the strongest women you could actually approach. And, I just feel like, you know, if you're dealing with a disease or, you know, whether it's a disease or a disability, that doesn't take away from your womanhood or your femininity or your beauty. So that's the idea of the joke, is that, like, never stopped me before.
Yeah.
little bit of chemsex, chemosex, whatever you're into, right? So, but you've got to hear the rest of it. But no, it genuinely is inspired by women in my life who I know, who are obviously one in two people, or one in three, maybe one in two people will develop one form of cancer or another. And, I think it's important for people to know, like, you know, especially for dealing with, like, I guess, it's like cervical cancer or like breast cancer, which may necessitate like a mastectomy or a hysterectomy, doesn't take away from your womanhood. So that's the idea of the joke.
Yep.
Yeah.
But it's just, how the best way to explain that without just being like, you can take chemo, you can take a dick. Although that's true too.
I think you should recall your next tour that name. That's a title.
Yeah, I actually wanted to give it a go of maybe doing like half an hour just about, like, without mansplaining, but just about women's issues. But then I feel like, and the rationale behind that is that I find, women in the comedy industry and comedians, when they are just, and this won't necessarily be from like a particularly accusatory position, just explaining women's issues and just explaining women in general, because it's not a narrative we've been hearing for that long.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, when certain audiences hear particular buzzwords like feminism, they get very scared, because it's still this image of like an angry woman in Dr. Martens and a lumberjack shirt. So people kind of shut down. And by the same token, it's like, when, if you, I would like to think I'm an ally, but being an ally doesn't mean you say to women, I'm a feminist too. I'm a feminist. I've got a mum.
Red flag.
what it is that with any kind of interest group is that you don't have to show your solidarity with them. What you need to be doing is people that are adverse to this group, this is who you're supposed to say it to.
So
I'm working on stuff where it's like, you can do it in a club and it could be like, you know, a row of stags. And you could explain, like, you know, a particular issue with, on gender politics, but it's in a way that, like, people, when it's articulated a certain way, then people can understand it. You so even, it. Like, going back to when we did the gig together in, like, it's like County Durham, it's like, very, very white. But at the same time, it's like, everyone, you know, I guess art or comedy are dealing with consciousness or a stream of consciousness, so that doesn't have a race or a gender or, you know, so you can, so there's nothing like I felt like I lost and people didn't really understand.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, why comedy's always been very effective, where politics is like public speaking to divide people, where comedy is like honest politics where you can kind of unite people.
Yep.
And I think that's always been the payoff, is that the weirder, more absurd shit that people are maybe scared to say now out in public, if you can say it in a way that kind of relaxes everybody, that's kind of...
Yeah.
Definitely.
...being a comic, so...
You're good at that, because you're like, you're eloquent, you're smart, and you're funny. So you're very good at...
You think my Tinder would be banging, innit?
Yeah!
But no, I think it's... the smartest thing you should be able to do, and as anybody, is take what's a complex subject and make it easy for most people to understand.
Yes.
And I think most people do understand these things. It's just the more they get caught up in all the jargon and all this crazy nomenclature, it's like people don't... they become a lot more adverse to it.
Yeah.
So the more people get afraid to answer questions and stuff, and the more that they become a bit more repressed in that fashion. So, yeah, I think I try to approach comedy in a smart way, but the smart thing to do is to take what are normally very, very complex subjects, or subjects where it's like they are obscured from the public in a way that, like, you know, for all of the political turmoil we have now, a large part of it is that people still don't really understand how it works.
Yep.
And so I think the more you can take that and... I guess, and I think nowadays the most effective form of satire now is to be able to explain to the average person what their government is doing, and how they can, you know, reclaim some of that control within a democracy.
Yeah, because that's what we're trying to do with this podcast as well, because it's a mental health podcast, which usually puts people off.
Yeah, of course.
But because we're doing it with comedy and we're doing it in a fun, stupid way.
Exactly.
It's an accessible way to get information that you would never usually go out and find, because you're not going to read a 3,000-word article on... whatever medication you're on, but if you hear someone talking about it in an earnest and honest way, it sinks in, and it's like any big subject. I think comedy is such a brilliant place to bring those subjects to the fore and just kind of be able to speak about them honestly. Like 2 years ago in Edinburgh, mental health was everyone was doing a show about mental health. It was amazing because we'd never seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
And having so many, especially for me, like as a sufferer, seeing people just talk about it openly and making jokes about it was incredible, because it's just like, it's an important thing and no one else was joking about it. It's so serious.
Well, I mean, it's a cliche, but it's, you know, laughter is the best medicine.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's probably one of the first defense mechanisms we have to like rationalize any kind of trauma. And that's why, you know, people say if you don't laugh, you'll cry.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, obviously, as a black person all the time, it's a cornerstone of being able to, like, rationalize and be able to deal with, like, institutional racism and stuff. Which is kind of the reason why when you'd see, like, what are regarded as, like, quite cliche comics, is, like, the whole white people, like, and black people be, like, that, I mean, that originates from being, like, a rebuttal to where you'd see, like, you know, racist propaganda everywhere. Like, even though we all are, like... appalled by it now, like seeing gollywogs and stuff on blackface, you know, maybe in the 60s, wasn't that out of place. So this stuff exists, so it's like, well, how can we have a voice back where we're not going to be represented in like media or news or politics? So comedy's been very effective in that, in the same way that, like, you know, comics for women in comedy as well, like it's always been historically feminist because, and for me, like I grew up with women, and so it wasn't, this is not crazy at all for me, and I wouldn't even think about it, and that's maybe part of my privilege, but just for a lot of women on stage, like some people are from, you know, cultures and backgrounds where like they're not, women aren't even used to being able to dominate the conversation in the room for 20 minutes, which to me is mad because I grew up with women. Like my mum's got like six sisters and they've got like two daughters each. So I was like the first boy in my family, so it's been women the whole time. But for me, it's like because I've got all of my predecessors have been women. Like the first person I saw drive and drive cool was my older sister, or fix a car, fix a tire was my sister. First people I saw to go to university was my mum went to open university, my cousin's going to university. So there's nothing where a guy'd be like, well, women are doing this now, and it would be strange to me.
Mm-hmm.
So then when, like, I started doing comedy and people were like, oh, women aren't funny, I'm like, what?
Have you met one?
Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, and I say, if you think about it, like for most men, it, and it really is quite, it's very, it's almost like, yeah, a very disrespectful notion because for most men, the most when you're born, most of the time you spend during your primary education and your rearing is with your mother, most likely. And it's your mum's doing all the peekaboo and all this other stuff, making you cry. So, I mean, you laugh, sorry. So probably the first person that made you laugh was a woman because that's the person that's like, you know, probably like tickling you and making you laugh and keeping you entertained and stuff because that's who you're bonding with more than anybody else. So it's the idea that women can't be funny when the first time you probably fucking smiled was at a woman. So how could that exist as a principle? So, yeah, so again, it's like recognising that comedy is very effective in providing the narrative for, you know, the planet's majority who've never really had a chance to speak anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I always find it quite fascinating. So for me, it was fascinating. So it's not, and when it's not gratuitous, but for me, jokes about you know, a woman talking about her body or femininity or being sex positive and seeing people recoil in horror. Like, I laugh very loudly and obnoxiously because I'm like, how can men obsessively talk about sex and vaginas and stuff? And then you're hearing about one from a direct account and now you're like, oh, my God.
Yeah. Pass me my fainting couch.
Bleeding, you say?
Clutching the pearl.
Yeah.
I had one where I don't read the comments anymore, but it was back in the stage when I was so desperate for validation that I was like, I'm going to read the comments. And someone had commented on a clip of mine and he was like, just once, I'd love to hear a female comedian who doesn't talk about a vagina. And I sat and I thought, I don't think I do. I don't think I have a joke. And I listened back through and I was wearing a sequin sparkly skirt and I'd made a fleeting comment like, oh, me fanny looks like a disco ball or something. Like just a fleeting, I don't think I even usually used it in me set. And I was like, that in a 6.5 minute set, that 10 second fleeting comment is what you took offence to. And I know you shouldn't reply, but I did. And I was like, are you so offended at me mentioning my vagina because it reminds you how long it's been since you've seen one? And he did not comment back.
Yeah, exactly. But this is the big part of it. And that's what makes it worse is that, like, again, I find that like massively patronising for men because it's like, you did. First of all, why shouldn't you not talk about it? Because odds are, every other man's thinking about it anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, so for you to be like, she's talking about her vagina, but you were all thinking about it in one way or another. But this is how we met. I don't know if you remember this.
You were thinking about my vagina.
No.
This podcast's taking a strange turn.
I was like, no, but then I was like, there's probably at least 0.74%. I'd be lying if it was 0.74%. But it's when you were doing Comedy Calf, doing a new act. And I think you were the only girl on the bill.
Yeah.
And you won?
I won it, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, see, I remember because I was like, she's better than everybody else.
Yeah.
Because you had something different to say.
Yeah.
And I was like, that was really good. And she was kind of like, it's a bit creepy. But again, I understand that you have to be on guard, right? Because I was like, hey, I'm a complete stranger. That was really good. So you're like, thank you. Don't kid at me. I'll make you a star, girl, in my van. I said, I remember you're in short, like in London, don't really know anybody. And I'm like, why don't you come and sign these contracts in my van with the tinted windows, girl? Yeah, you got potential.
But I think it is that kind of like, it's just people want different stories now. We spend, especially with comedy and stuff, we spent so long hearing the same sort of narrative over and over again. And it's so refreshing to go to Edinburgh and just see as many and different opinions about everything that you possibly can. Sorry. I don't know. That was just my point. That's it. Completely.
It's great, man. I think it's. Now that we are doing a lot more observation of mental health, I think it's. It's really good. I feel like, you know, you look around somewhere like London and Metropolis, where you've got like Pure Gym and 24 Gym, and there's so many facilities that deal with and yoga, and there's yoga places everywhere, and loads of places that deal with you know, physical, but I suppose psychological. There's not a lot of places, like we don't really have mind gyms and stuff, even though we are much more reliant on our brains. But then at the same time as well, I feel like even when you consider mental health, for me it's like there's nature and nurture. So I think there is some predisposition based on, like, you know, your hormone release or chemical balances within your head or how that's stated. But I also feel like, I really feel like as a social species, the rise in mental health, given our current lifestyle, for me, it's not surprising.
Yeah.
I feel like it's right now, as crazy as it sounds, like anyone dealing with some issues of mental health now, it's probably the healthiest position to be in. I'm very romantic about these things, but I mean, if you're at this point now experiencing in the developed world, experiencing issues of depression and stuff like that, I mean, it's almost a way you still know you have your humanity.
Exactly that.
Yeah, it's as crazy as that. In the same way that, like, there was a time where if you saw, like, an insect on your food, you'd be like, oh my God, Now it's like, well, at least I know it's not genetically modified. Like, so it's just crazy. Like, oh, at least it's real lettuce and stuff. Like, if I see a caterpillar in it. But it's, I just think now mental health is... I spoke about this with friends before where, you know, now we have a lot more emotion. We have to give off a lot more emotional currency because tragedy is literally at our fingertips.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of the time you wouldn't really know that much about like global grief outside of if you read the newspaper. And now you're bombarded with it to the point where, unfortunately, it's sensationalized. Like, you know, there's like a whole subgenre of entertainment dedicated towards like, you know, sensationalizing grief and like serial killings and stuff, which I think is fine on the one hand, but yeah, it's just a matter of time before it can compound you. Like, even what you're saying, like not responding to like trolls and comments and stuff like that, it's just a weird thing where social media hasn't been around that long for us to work out how to rationalize and deal with it.
Exactly that.
So we're still trying to work it out, but it's because I would say to people, it's like, you do get some horrible vitriol on the internet. However, prior to the internet, like when you went to like a public toilet, you'd like maybe in a cubicle and you're like, I don't even want to be in here. But you see something on the wall and you'd be like, Katie's a slag, call this number. And you wouldn't really give it that much thought. You'd just be like, who wants to spend that much time in this toilet to write that down?
Yeah.
Right? And you'd see all this kind of horrible stuff, or you'd be on a school desk or like a park bench, and that's where people would put these horrible things like, Nazis are cool. And you wouldn't really think much about it. It's just now people represent that same sentiment as like eggs or like false avatars and stuff. It's for the same thing, for shock value, and to just, you know, of course, I guess, you know, just to offend people, but do it anonymously. And but the internet gives it, for weird reason, some reason, we give it a bit more credit because it's out there on the internet. And yeah, it's just a matter of time before that begins to affect people. And yeah, some of our exchanges and what kind of images we build when we are dealing with these straw men, I think that causes a lot of problems, because on the one hand, it's like you may have an argument with somebody who is, you can't even see their face, and you're like, well, you're a prick, and they might be, and they'd be the most ignorant person. But then you think, if I was on a bus and someone started saying that, I wouldn't be like, excuse me, sir, I have statistical information that disproves your fact that pigeons are race. And you wouldn't have that conversation. You'd be like, you're a nut. I don't care. Where's my stop?
Exactly.
And so it's just, I guess it's just trying to apply the, you know, the rich coping skills we've had socially for years. And it's just trying to apply them to what's a new society.
Yeah.
And essentially, this is what, like, if you think of social media as, like, a society, like, now it's like a high school, because that's how long it's been around for. So it's a teenager now, so the collective consciousness is also teenaged. And I don't know about the rest of you, but, like, I thought high school was shit. Secondary school is fucking shit, because what you're dealing with secondary school is there's just a bunch of people where it's the... mind of children with the body of adults, which is why the stuff you see on the internet is like so carnal and can be so like fucked. But people's reaction to things are like teenagers, and sometimes they do tend to overreact because we're all hormonal as a teenager, which is why, for example, like say with a teenager, you might say to somebody, are you going to wear that? You might be cold. Don't you dare body shame me. Everyone is trying to kill me. So we're calling it like a victim thing. But like I said, it's just an adolescent brain, because some people are not used to seeing this kind of vitriol, because like, so you wouldn't give it that much thought. But when anonymously, like, for example, if you were walked by someone in the pub and some ugly drunk guy who you know hasn't seen a woman for like a decade was like, you need to get new shoes, like, you would laugh and be like, whatever, dude, like, come on, like, you live with your mum. You'd be able to give that guy a profile straight away, but on the internet, it's like, because it's anonymity, you don't know who this person is.
Yeah.
So it gives you this weird kind of credence, and this is how it's affecting some of us.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
But yeah, I just feel like it's... We are still trying to work out how it affects us. And some people working out how to rationalise it. And
well, it's just because it's all so new. Like,
exactly.
Our access to information has never been greater than it is now. Yeah. And our amygdala is the threat centre of the brain. Mm-hmm. Since the 1800s until like 1990s. Mm-hmm. We're quite like, everything's getting safer. Like, our general life was getting safer. We weren't under threat all the time. No. And then when we got all of this information at our fingertips every single day, our brain went, we haven't evolved quick enough to deal with these amount of threats on a day-to-day basis.
In fact, we've regressed because now you've got flat earthers now and anti-vaxxers and stuff. And while real life is becoming more technologically advanced, like people are, because of our ability to rely on it, then now we're becoming medieval.
Yeah.
So that's what happens. Like you said, if you post a picture and you're like, felt cute today, she's a witch! She's a witch! In medieval times, like Salem witch trials, stuff like that, for me, that would have been like, that's just like a bunch of incels.
Yeah.
Like killing all the articulate, like smart women who were in their village. If a woman says something like, well, I think that we should have maternity leave. Where? I don't know. Maybe the earth revolves around the sun. Who said that? She. She? Nah. Where?
Get Karen in the leg. Yeah.
No, so it's just all it's those same pitchforks are just online.
Yep.
And I just think people just need to just kind of learn not to give up your ghost to the machine, and think that that's more important than living, and also just not to take what people say on that too seriously.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Because it's just, these are like the people that you'd see on the internet and think that they're an issue. If you saw them in real life, you would, you wouldn't even give it a second thought.
No, it's something that we never got taught as well, because there was never any lessons of how to use this, because we all grew up in a generation where it just happened, and we taught ourselves how to use it. So there's never been a guide of what you should or shouldn't do, and we never got told how to look after ourselves on there. It's so easy to let yourself get so kind of addicted to finding like just something to argue about or something to get pissed off about, because it's such an easy emotion to do.
And it's so suggested to you as well, because and this is what I mean about the whole mental health thing, is that you are bombarded. Because, you know, news is always led by, if it bleeds, it leads. And and people want to have arresting headlines and titles. Because now you can quantify how people respond to stuff. It's, again, you're not in a world where we are showing things on the merit of its quality, it's on its quantity.
Yep.
So even if something is horrible that you don't necessarily want to see, it's like people, because the spectacle is horrible, they're like, oh, God, you won't believe it. You need to see this. Mm-hmm. So you start taking more and more of the stuff, and it begins to affect us, which is why it's like, given, like I said, how easy it is for us to have access to global tragedy, it is no surprise that we are seeing a rise of issues with mental health.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you were to, even in the same way that if I was just to believe in, if my perception of people like, you know, in the north or the northeast was based on what I saw on the internet, then I'd be like, well, I don't even want to go. They're going to hate me. But like I said, there's a welcoming audience that are attentive and stuff and listen to what I'm saying. So, you know, it's, even when we talk about like this 52-48 divide along the Brexit line and stuff like that as well, it's still not representative of this country. Mm-hmm. You know, like even yesterday I was performing in Banbury, and again, it's great reception and stuff. And I don't say people don't necessarily love me, but it's this these archetypes that are being built by media, like, you know, people live in the northeast and so they're working class and they're racist and they're resentful and all xenophobic. It's not really the case. No. Which is what I mean. I think and I think
they're invented threats. That's all they are.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, years, like centuries, millennia ago, we were scared of saber-toothed tigers being eaten and all that sort of shit. So we developed that fight or flight response sort of thing. But now, because we do live in such a safer time, generally, we get these invented threats or these imaginary threats. It's not I'm going to get eaten by a bear when I walk out of the house. It's, am I going to get bombed? Am I going to get abused online? Is one of my nudes going to get leaked? And all these kind of things that we just, we're paranoid mind.
We're massively,
And the news just keeps chucking those out as well, because that's how they get clicks.
Oh, completely. And it also stems, I think, from another, I guess, complex that we all have mentally, where it's this, it's just that personal responsibility. So it's a lot easier for you to be able to have a scapegoat, because then you don't have to question yourself and your achievements in life. If you can say to yourself, and for me, I'm not just right enough for saying this, it's just people being lazy. It's just rationalization. It's much easier for you to be like, I'm not able to realize my industrial dreams or aspirations because there's someone else stopping me from doing it. Especially if you've been brought under this, under the ideology of capitalism. It's a zero-sum game. So for them to gain, I have to lose. So I need to be, and so some people have to define their existence by being able to outperform somebody else. So which is why, you know, you look at, and because you look, if you look at, like, for example, like sexism and gender and stuff, it's like, For everyone saying, oh, we're in a democracy, we are in a democracy. Yeah, but then if we're in a democracy and it's by majority rule, there are more women on the planet than men. So by a democracy, then we would be, would patriarchy wouldn't exist, it'd be matriarchal. We don't have that. So even then, it doesn't really work. Always like, well, so first women will do this and then they want them to do this. And it's like, yeah, but I mean, we do that already. So it's because guys, well, when they start killing men and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, but women are being killed by men all the time, and they're going to, you can't do this. And yeah, but these are things that women are coping with on a daily, hourly basis. So, I mean, they seem to be doing fine without killing us all the time. So, yeah, but it's so, again, it's just, and that's something that human beings have aren't really taught to do anyway. Like I said, in terms of saying we're not, because it is a part, for me, that is all a part of the, I guess, the journey of having mental health. And maintaining mental health is that personal responsibility. And it's not this thing of like, which people think it's just being an individual and fucking self. It's just setting these standards for yourself where it's like, I know how these things make me feel. Therefore, I won't visit it on somebody else. And that's not me versing anything like that. It's like, how can you, if you are not prepared to observe an emotion, a positive one like empathy or sympathy, how can you expect it in other people? Because if you don't recognise it in yourself, then how would you even look for it?
Exactly.
You know, and that, in the same way that it's like, for example, it's like when someone's like, if you've been with like bad partners your whole life and now you want someone to value you, it's not necessarily that you're a stupid person, but you can't look for something you've never seen. Because how would you recognise it? In the same way that like, if you're someone from an unstable family background or your parents are estranged, you're not a bad person, and it's not necessarily the fact that you are predisposed to fuck up relationships, but it's very hard for you to replicate something you've never seen.
Yeah.
Because that's your primary education. That's the first perspective you have of relationships. So if you're used to seeing conflict, then that's just, you're just going to repeat that. And so this is, I think with mental health, for me, is that there's just a quantum of humanity you have to observe first within yourself. And then that makes you more effective.
Yeah.
And sometimes that can mean, like, you know, confronting some very serious trauma, which a lot of people have to repress. And so, you know, for myself as a comedian, I like trying potentially like dreams and stuff like that as well, because these are like suggestions from your subconscious mind. And even though it's like symbolism and stuff, it's trying to tell you something. So now I could, obviously we do comedy, so I enjoy doing it. It means like I won't have dreams about like feeling unfulfilled at work. But at the same time, it's like, there are a lot of people that are marginalised or oppressed or deal with trauma, so they become insomniacs. So that has a massive effect on your mental well-being. And I feel like a lot of the time with hallucinations and multiple personalities and stuff like that, these come from the fact that like if you're not able to deal with these things consciously, then subconsciously what happens is your brain begins to create a new personality. And so, cause so, for example, you know Marlon, right, was in a coma. So Marlon Davis, a friend of ours, is in a coma. And he said that while he was in this coma, it felt like he was in there for years. But he was in basically a dream state where he imagined himself as the leader of a boy band, the leader of a boy band. And I guess the reason why is because what his subconscious mind did is that now it's created a reality where you're still technically a creative. And you're still at the forefront. So you're still technically like, because stand-up is like, we're all like rock stars trying to be the lead singer. Because it's an individual art form. So now your brain's created this reality that, you know, provides for that need that you have. While you're being, while your brain's being repaired. So he's like, I'm in this life, but I still feel relaxed. Because if, and he's like, I don't remember the crash, I don't remember. And if he did, then that trauma is just going to cause more distress psychologically. So now your brain's create this reality for you to relax in. So it's almost like a screensaver. While it self-repairs. I think what happens a lot of the time in people that have issues where it's like paranoid delusions or schizophrenia or multiple personality disorder is that if you're not able to rest or be able to address that trauma, then in your conscious state, your mind will start creating these things, which is why they have these hallucinations and stuff. So it's just like you're dreaming like you're awake. And so these are things that you're not able to have treated in your conscious mind, subconscious mind, so then they manifest consciously in the same way that, like, everybody else puts up a, will put up one form of persona to deal with life on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. But if you're dealing with quite a serious piece of trauma, like you're a victim of sexual or physical abuse, there may not be enough of help for you to deal with that trauma. So again, with people that deal with like multiple personalities, that then I need to create a personality for myself because this personality allows me to defend myself from this historic trauma.
Yeah.
So this is why people create new personalities for themselves.
It's like you were saying earlier, because we have those physical gyms everywhere, but there's no mind, nowhere out there.
Unless you're rich and you can afford the therapy, exactly that. You know, and or if you're lucky enough, maybe NHS can maybe hook you up with some kind of CBT. But then this is what I'm worried about, because on the one hand, everyone's like, you know, support the troops and I want to be a patriot and I support the idea of people going to war and defending the freedoms of our country. Mm. When these people are returning, though, they are going to be dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder that their salaries won't be able to afford for them to have a therapist.
Yep.
So if you are going to allow the NHS to be privatised, these troops you think you care about so much, like, human beings would never predispose for conflict or war in the way, like seeing violence. We don't react well to it. Even when children, before they understand it, emotionally, they will react negatively when they see violence or conflict. Mm-hmm. So when people are coming back from these situations, then they're going to need this help. And if it's not provided for them, it's no surprise that we have an enormous glut of, like, the homeless that are former war veterans. So I feel like, mental health, I really feel like it's not an easy thing, but I think it's more simple than the excessive medication a study feels for. I think we are a social species and human beings thrive through their ability to interact and be able to project and interact with each other.
Yep.
And I feel like, you know, and this is something I worked out early when I was trying to do my own voyage of self-discovery for comedy and trying to do it as best as possible, is that, you know, when we talk about, like, heaven and hell and these, like, and I guess the way we've tried to, again, explain our journey through, like, religion and stuff, is, like, loneliness is the true hell.
Mm-hmm.
That is the true hell. Like, if when you're born as a kid, if you don't have interaction, you'll just die.
Yep.
So we can't even perceive that. So, and this is the problem with, like, social media and stuff, is that when we provide it's artificial, essentially, even though you feel interacting with people, there is actually no connection. So you're just still regressing to being like an amoeba.
Yeah.
Thing about amoebas is that, because a single cell, which means it's massively conscious of itself and self-serving and somewhat to a level conceited. And this is how we behave when we are on social media. It's just me. Yeah. Look at me. Look at me. This is what I did.
Yeah.
Look at me. This is how I live. And, you know, so, and and that's why we become so sensitive and so conscious to these things. So, yeah, I just think mental health really and the prevalence more recently of issues with mental health is just because, like, there are a lot of ways now to distract us from our humanity. Mm-hmm. And I think a big part of education should include that. It's just knowledge of self and learning to interact with other people and, you know, investigating more stuff like empathy. And it makes it so much easier. Even like I said, for myself, it could have been very easy for me to be adverse to hearing narratives from whether it's from women and the trans community and stuff. And not because I am opposed to these people, but, you know, like I said, it's very easy to become very guarded and feel like when people are asserting their equality, you interpret that as dominance.
Yeah.
Because it's just how we're engineered socially. So it's like, it's much easier if you're like, well, if you just put yourself in those shoes, how it would feel, it's not very difficult.
Yeah, it's that weird mindset of if that person has more of that thing, then I'm going to have less of my thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, that's not how this works.
Yeah, exactly.
If you could have a mind gym, what are the three things you would put in it that you know would sort you out? If you could build your own mind gym?
I think it's just venting, man. I think like you should be able to have friends and stuff like that. So, you know, you'd have like a spot when you're doing weights and stuff.
Yeah.
Like you should have like a venting spot, like where you have your friend where you can just be like, fuck this and fuck this and this pissed me off, and that person listens and then you just take it in turns. So it's almost like sparring where you just hold the punch back so someone can get it out and then you do the same thing. So I feel like, I mean, with comedy, again, one of the unique privileges of our job is that, you know, I think so many people in the world don't have the opportunity to stay on, be in a position where everyone's listening to them and they talk about what things move them and, you know, cause them to emote in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's just the smallest thing, is that people are just repressed where it's like, this is how I have to behave because I'm in a relationship. This is how I have to behave because I'm an employee. This is how I have to behave because I'm a taxpayer. And I think all of these things were all long-term, these obligations that really have no real basis.
Yeah.
I think these begin to compound the complexes we have, whether they are superiority or inferiority. So, like, I was on a train recently and this couple were having an argument about the guy was going on holiday. And she was like, you're not allowed to go. And I'm like, No one should say that to anybody.
Yeah.
Like, you can say, I'm scared about you going.
Yeah.
You can say, I don't feel good about you going. Mm-hmm. You can even say, I hate the idea you're going. But for you to tell another human being what to do, no. There's no social convention that should allow that. Because, I mean, because we all know on the other side that will always immediately be interpreted as, like, manipulation and abuse. And it's the same on both sides. But no other human being, especially if you consider that person to be an adult, should be telling somebody else what they're allowed to do.
Yeah.
Because you don't want someone to... I don't want anyone to tell me what to do. Mm. So, you know, and by having that, and like I said, so my ability to be liberal comes from the fact that, like, I want liberation for myself.
Mm-hmm.
More than, so it's like, I don't want any of my personal human freedoms or human rights, and I don't mean that legally. I just mean my right to breathe the same air as everybody and to be happy and to have what relationship I want and to interact with everybody how I want and, you know, have my place in the world. By that token, if someone's like, well, we're trans and we want to adopt kids, cool. If the kid's happy with it and no one's getting hurt and it's everything's done with everyone's consent and you cause no harm or loss to any other human being, why would I have a problem with that?
Exactly.
Yeah.
What reflection does that have on you? Some people are, well, you know, gay marriage and other... But it doesn't affect you. Yeah. It's of no reflection of you whatsoever. So
how does it actually affect your life?
At all, exactly. Like... And it's like, why would you want to be integral or instrumental in anyone else's misery?
Yep.
Yeah. That's what you really think that two dads talking to a child is more awkward than explaining to a kid why Father Christmas doesn't visit an orphanage?
Mm-hmm.
It's very easy to work out which one of those things, because, like, again, it's like, if I was a child and I had abandonment issues because I had no parents, I know how I would feel if it was like, no one wants to take care of you other than the state, or these two men or these two women, or this trans woman and this trans woman want to take care of you and love you unconditionally. Well, then, could give a fuck about social convention because there are two people in my life that actually strangers that care about me.
Exactly.
So for me, like, so the one thing would be like just that ability to vent. And I feel like, you know, anger is not necessarily a negative emotion. I think there's always, you know, we have a spectrum.
Yep.
And sometimes anger is necessary for you to appreciate the state of calm that comes with conflict resolution.
Yes.
Yep.
So, and I feel like this is another problem with society now, is that we're being told that anger and aggression aren't, you can't have these emotions. And obviously time and place, but this idea, if you start to begin to repress these ideas of anger or expression of explosive anger, then, you know, it's a lot easier for people to take the piss if you don't react to stuff. Because it's like, you know, because if on a smaller scale, if, like, for example, Aaron, like, you are a politician or we're in a room and me and Lauren are like taxpayers and you're like, from now on, I'm going to charge you a bit more for water. And we're like, what the f-? And we go, like, no, you fucking aren't. You'll think twice about trying to get one over on us.
Mm. Yeah.
But if we just repress it, we're like, okay, I don't really like it.
Bro. Yeah.
I couldn't get angry, stiff upper lip. Then it's much easier for people to take the piss. So it's like this idea that, like, anger is always, like, it's not a good emotion. I kind of I'm opposed to that in the same way that, like, because, you know, again, the British and being elitist and having a stiff upper lip, that's more of a privilege that if you are rich, because most of the time, I guess, you don't have a lifestyle that's going to elicit anger anyway if you live a certain life privilege. So I understand why you might understand why anger is not an emotion you recognise, because most of the time your needs are met. And also people don't have the access that you do to have, like, you know, the kind of therapy or psychological facilities that can take care of that. So sometimes anger is healthy in the same way that, like, you know, you have to have pain for you to appreciate joy.
Yeah.
You know, so it's all for sake of balance.
Exactly that.
So I guess, yeah, that would be another thing I'd have in the mind gym would be, you know, depending on where you are, like, because sometimes if you are feeling some kind of acute depression and you are, like, most of us are, we get upset about the state of the world and our fears of how the people we love and how we're going to be able to survive within it. That's something we should be able to express as well.
Yeah.
You know, again, this is why women's emotional intelligence is higher than men. And they've learned this a long time, that women, like, crying together, that's fine. They enjoy doing that.
Oh, I love a good cry.
Together, yeah. And it's that emotional catharsis that you are sharing with other people. It does so much for you, just for you to know, oh, someone else went through that too.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That level
it's
of...
Okay to it's, let so, it's okay to go, yeah.
That level is so important for most people that, like I said, as a social species, seeing something that reflects who you are does so well for your mental state.
Mm-hmm.
So even when you've talked about stuff like institutional and structural racism and stuff, it's like people don't understand... For a woman to see of a certain size, for example, to see another woman of that size on a billboard, in our capitalist world where we are driven by these images, just seeing that will do so, does so much for people's mental state. So yeah, it's just being able to have a surroundings of positive imagery of what reflects each of something that reflects you.
Yeah,
would be
representation
part as well.
Just everything is so fucking important.
Because in order for you to experience humanity, you kind of have to observe it other places as well.
Exactly.
So yeah, I just think it's for a lot of stuff with the mind gym. A mind gym, for me, the equivalent of a mind gym is just, spending time with people that you care about.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't have to be that complicated. I just think there should be a culture within our culture. There should be dedication that, in the same way that, you should read or exercise, there should be the exercise of being able to see, like, a friend and go to eat together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or have a conversation with a family member. Or, just catch up with a friend. Or to speak to somebody you don't speak to that often. And, depending on how precious that person is, but really, sometimes to somebody, just to send them a text, hey, what's up, man? That's enough to change somebody's life. And because when we talk about like the most extreme parts of depression and like, when people become suicidal, I feel people are suicidal. And I think, and as a comic, I'd be lying if you say not considered suicide, but gotten to a point where those feelings make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I say this because it's not necessarily the idea of being drastic as like, I want to kill myself. But sometimes, especially when you're a creative, your whole thing is, I'm trying to take something intangible, like my emotions and complexes and neuroses that I have, and make it into something that you can see and hear so that you can understand where I'm coming from. Sometimes when that process of doing that and taking what's in here and in here in your heart and your head and making that, it can be very distressing, especially if you don't identify with people immediately. Mm-hmm. So we all get to that point where it's like, I feel so disconnected from the world at large, I just don't feel like I should be here because I don't feel like I'm here anyway. Or is that, like I said, it's online, it's like, I feel so like, I'm bleeding so much for the world and how bad the state it is in. It's like, I don't know if I need to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what happens a lot of the time with people that suicide. It's not that people, I want to kill myself, but it's this, my level of disconnection has become so much that it's like, I might as well not even be here.
Yeah.
And it's just a numbness. And so what tends to happen a lot of the time is when people get that near-death experience, just that reminder of their humanity through just the survival instinct kicking in, they get like a new lease of life.
Yeah,
totally.
And so the thing is, it's just it's very much important to celebrate life. But life for human beings is your interactions with other human beings, and it is your symbiotic relationship with like other animals and organisms within the world and stuff. And I think the more we try and move away from that, that our mental health will kind of worsen, because I said that's, technology is new, but humanity and existence has been around for millions of years.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
So to think that we can transition straight away, it's not really going to work.
This is by far my favourite episode we've done so far.
Yeah.
I'll cut that line, obviously.
I feel like all your mind gym suggestions are so smart, and I was thinking, room of dogs. Room of dogs.
Which is a good idea, because animals, they've not built up all these complexes and all these things to make their interactions more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, because you notice lots of different animals or different species can interact, and they like rub fur together and stuff, and they get on very well because it's just they understand their connection with nature and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, unless I am your predator,
there's
no reason, and we can coexist. There's no reason for any displays of like dominance or violence, because if I'm a herbivore and you're a carnivore, then we have different diets. We're never going to lose or anything like that. So
exactly,
I think that's what's so nice about like holding a baby. As well, it's just like, oh, you are just so pure, and you've done nothing wrong, and I'm just holding a little bit of innocence, and then it shits on you, and you're like, everything hates me.
Exactly. Well, initially they're like, because babies only care about themselves, because that's all they know is themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
Amoebas.
So amoebas. So and the thing is, there's a reason. I feel like there's a reason why humans were like this. Like, if you look at like, if we have originated from a single celled organism. Like that, these genetic traits have not left our DNA. It's just increased.
Yep.
So sometimes human beings, so we, by that token, we have the capacity to behave in some way like all of our predecessors. We can behave insane, like humping everything like primates. We can be like, like birds and be like kind of air-brained. And, you have the reptilian brain as well, where you're just like cold-blooded and driven by your self-gratification. And you can be like an amoeba where it's like you're completely self-conscious of yourself. And so I think it's just the more you understand yourselves, I think it makes interacting a lot easier. And I feel like we are getting to a point where I think some of us are starting to realise that the systems that have been telling us who we aren't really working anymore. Mm-hmm. In a way, for example, like politically, you'd be told, like, depending on what your leanings were, if you're like working class and you're Labour, and if you're middle class and you're Tory. But now we're seeing now it's like, it's starting to look like no one knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
And no one's representing us anyway. And that's part of our giving over of our power to people who very clearly, the rationale behind that was like, these people are well versed in these things. This is why we delegate our power and we pay tax for them to do that. We're realising, oh, I don't think they actually know what they're doing. They don't know what they're doing. And that's the thing. I think it's, again, important for rationale when we're dealing with like inferiority complexes based on like class and stuff, is that these people, like you said, Lauren, they're babies. They're born like you are. Mm-hmm. They shit in their nappies and stuff as well. They drink milk the same way that you do. It's all these ideas that we are separating other human beings along these lines of like class and socioeconomic background and stuff. We create those really ourselves. Mm-hmm. But that person is no different to you. They're not going to be able to survive without oxygen any more than you are. Even if they've built up all of this in their head that money's going to save them, it's not going to. Yeah. In the same way that, like, it's very all well and good to keep putting up house prices in London so that people can't afford to live here. But if you're trying to thrive off a gig economy where you're dependent on services like Uber and Deliveroo and stuff, if people can't afford to live in London, they're not going to come in and work. So at some point, you continuing to suppress a working class, it's going to be a problem for you. Mm-hmm. In the same way that, like, you know, whether you're rich or super rich, like, you know, you may be people in your family might be born with a disability, or you're going to get older and have degenerative disease to deal with. People from your socioeconomic background are not going to be nurses taking care of your relatives and loved ones. Mm-hmm. So this idea that nobody can, like, you can all survive as individuals is never really going to work. And yeah. For me, that's the equivalent of being like, it's all well and good living in Hollywood, but if you're not going to prepare to work on, like, forest fires, they're going to get to you at some point.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same thing, is that, like, we can continue to separate ourselves and act like we're better than people and create these walls where we divide ourselves. But if that is the case, if we're not looking at how we can enrich ourselves together, we're all going to get to that point. You know, if you're like, well, these people need to be poor so I can stay and have enough money. If there is a system which is continuing to exploit people's money and stuff like that, what's going to stop it from getting to you?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
Right, we've overrun a little bit. So would you like to do our last
question? My game.
I've
invented a game. I haven't invented it. I sort of invented it.
Innovated it.
Right. So you know the Would You Rather game?
Yes.
But it's all anxious scenarios.
Cool.
So if you just pick a number between 1 and 18.
Oh, I'm going to go for 7.
7. Okay. Would you rather be told off in public or have to tell someone off in public?
I would rather, it's quite a tough one, but I'd rather be told off in public.
Yeah, I think I'm the same.
Yeah, me too.
I'd rather be the one that can apologise for the scene happening rather than making the scene.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm that's never been a point of pride for me. Like, I've never had a problem saying sorry.
No.
A lot of people do. A lot of people really do.
Mm-hmm. Elton John says it's the hardest word.
Yeah, it's true. It is.
I'm so proud of that.
That was going to be really profound then for a moment.
It's pretty profound because Elton John don't take no shit. So if he feels a way about something, he says it. Yeah. So, but no, it's I think sorry for most human beings is people should embrace that. Mm-hmm. And it's because I guess people are scared of the vulnerability of taking the lower status if they've made an error. Mm-hmm. But if I can give listeners any advice, it's like, use it as a litmus test and save yourself some time. If you have made a mistake and you apologise to someone you care about for making a mistake and they continue to berate you even after you've made this mistake, it's easy because then you know that person's a prick, because if you're at your lowest ebb, they're still going to kick you when you're down. Mm-hmm. Whereas for myself, like, I've had heated conversations or arguments with friends or family and stuff. Once you say sorry or you're sad, I leave it then, because now very clearly my point is made.
Yeah.
So I don't need to turn it down, take a higher status or a pretentious state like I'm better than you. None of my, you've seen my point and you've acknowledged it. Nothing more needs to be said. I feel like a lot of people are afraid of that vulnerability of acknowledging that they're wrong because they feel they take a lower status and someone can take advantage of that.
Yeah.
But that's more a reflection of you and also a reflection of that person. Yeah. If you've conceded to them and they still feel insecure enough that they have to remind you, then you probably, it's easy for you to know that's not someone you need to be around anyway.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Marvellous. And our last question that we always finish with is, if you could go back and give your younger self any advice about mental health or living without misery, what would it be?
It would be to just listen to yourself. And, you know, to everyone, if your actions, and you know your actions, you know yourself, if you are not intending to cause any harm or loss to anybody else or anything else, then you live your life however you choose. That's my advice to anyone. Just be yourself. Perfect. Live however you want to live. I mean, you have the opportunity now to, through the internet and stuff, to meet people, like-minded people. Mm-hmm. But however you want to live, like, you do that. You're not going to hurt anybody. There's enough people like doing this, doing regular shit. There's enough people doing basic shit or doing something different to what you're doing. So my advice, like, yeah, my mental health became at its best point when I basically was just honest about who I was with myself. So my advice would be just be yourself.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
We hope you can take something from this podcast away with you in your day-to-day life. Whatever situation you're in, you're not by yourself. We can share our stories, share our experiences, we can help each other know that things do get better.
Well, that was episode 21. Thank you to Dane. Really hope you enjoyed that one. I certainly did. Thank you very much to Lauren. Thank you to Dave and Calm for helping us make this little podcast. And thanks to you, as always. I mean, it'd be just weird if you weren't listening to it. Or if you're not listening to it, I'm just talking to myself and spending most of my life uploading this onto the internet for no one to hear. That's sad, isn't it? That's quite sad. If you are here and you are listening to this, please rate, review, like, subscribe, all of that jazz. The more people that listen, the more money goes to Calm. We all donate and we can all feel smug about it and live our lives in a happy, happy as people that listen to a mental health podcast can be on a day-to-day basis, I guess. That's probably enough from me. I should stop talking. I mean, that's a general rule for thumb. Rule for thumb. Rule of thumbs. How many thumbs? Too many thumbs. Rule of thumb for life. That's what I was going to say. I'm going to stop talking. See you next week. Love you. Bye. Bye-bye, 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 bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Would you give your mum, dad, aunt, or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no! Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got 6 comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos, and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this? What is...
I know what this one is.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising people.
Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.